Are you looking to cut back on alcohol this year? You are talking to two sober Sallys. You know Zach and I love to drink Recess Zero Proof craft mocktails because it's a guilt-free way to unwind. It has 0% alcohol, made with real fruit, only 25 calories or less, and it is sweetened with agave because y'all know I got that sugar addiction. It has incredible flavors. One of my favorites is the grapefruit Paloma. The Paloma is actually one of the last drinks I was drinking when I was drinking alcohol. So this is like a nice little nostalgia moment, and it still feels really fun in my hand. And there's no reason we should be missing out on the partying either. It's such a good replacement for alcohol, a great drink for having in between alcoholic drinks, unwinding at home, at dinner parties, chilling on the couch. It is endless. Get 15% off Recess mocktails now at takearecess.com/Kelsey so you can enjoy your favorite cocktails without the consequences.
You have to excuse my sinus infection. I've had a sinus infection for like since January, basically. And
COVID, probably.
I keep getting tested. I'm like, you know, this is it. This is the time. This is 100% it. And then my ENT is like, stop coming here. I don't want to see you.
We have other people we need to see.
He's like, there's a woman out there with a broken nose. This one's bleeding. Stop coming here. Take a fucking Claritin. And I'm like, but I can't breathe when I wake up in the morning. He's like, get a different pillow.
I feel funny, though.
I feel sad. He's like, that's your depression. Go to your psychiatrist. Speaking of depression, confidants, I have John Moe here.
Hey.
Which, like, synonymous with depression. If you don't know who John
Moe
is.
Always a life goal to be synonymous with clinical depression.
If you don't know who John Moe is, and you like me, you need to know who John Moe is. He is not only an author and a writer and just the best podcast host and voice host. He's interviewed people, very, very big celebrities, like some of the Duplass bros, Patton Oswalt, Jamila Jamil, Maria Bamford. Oh my gosh, Patty Harrison, one of my faves, Mike Birbiglia. And not to mention, he did do a pool quote for the hit new book, Don't Fucking Panic, which I couldn't believe because it seemed so far out of my reach, and he came down to my level. And he has a new podcast out today called Depresh Mode. John Moe, you're here.
Hello, and you're here on Depresh Mode. Our episode with you drops on the very first day. Patton Oswalt episode and Kelsey Darragh episode on the same day.
Thank you for saying my last name right. It flows so easily out of your mouth. With a name like John Moe, you really can't fuck that up, huh?
It's been done. I've had substitute teachers say Moe.
Put a little spice on it.
I guess. No, it's like the Stooge Moe.
Do you have an insane middle name? Just like Alexander Sebastian Christopher.
I wish. No, it's Erling, which is my father's name. My dad was Erling John Moe, and my parents are Norwegian. So it's
what I actually think that is super fancy. Erling is like Erling. Beautiful.
It's nice, isn't it? Yeah.
You sound like you own a castle.
Well, there's some big soccer star named Erling from Norway, and he's like 19 years old, and he's a phenom. And it's weird because whenever I hear about him, I just think of my dad, you know, who is.
Telling people that's your son? You should.
I should. Yeah. My own 20-year-old son might get a little offended. But.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that you have kids, because that was a question I have saved for later. But like, let's just dive into it, shall we? My connection to you, like, I'm not kidding when I say, like, I truly thought you were out of my reach. I put you in such high regard of like important journalistic work that I didn't even think you had social media, because you know how those reporters sometimes are like too good for those things. But yeah. You are a bit of like a classier podcast host, in that your structure is so, you're a great storyteller. And
oh, thank you.
When I first Googled podcasts about mental health, yours was the only one that came up. And now when I think of you, I think of depression. How does that feel? What is that like to be known for depression?
Well, it's self-created. I mean, I had spent a lot of years, well, I was an actor for a while. And then I was at Amazon. I was an editor at Amazon for a while when I started to write more. And then I ended up in public radio. And so I would cover various stories. I hosted some news magazine shows and, you know, ran a tech show for a while, did a comedy show for a while. And I have like a, you know, I'm very, very curious about a lot of things all the time. And, you know, went to a liberal arts college, so you never really specialize all that much. But I noticed, you know, and this was only about 10 years ago, I noticed that whenever I would talk about mental health on social media, or, you know, I would be invited to talk to a group or something based on my writing about it, my experiences with it, there was a real hunger for it. And, you know, I think I can string together a sentence pretty well, but I think it's also, it's also a societal hunger for it. Like, it's a topic people have been dying to talk about.
Literally.
Yeah. Dying because they didn't talk about it. So it was, I was like, well, I'll just lean into this. And, you know, initially when I started podcasting, it was like, well, I want to do a podcast. What kind of topic should I pick? And now it's like, well, I'm just going to talk about this stuff for the rest of my life. And it can be, you know, name the podcast or book or speech or newsletter or whatever it is. Right. It's just my thing.
Does it make you depressed to be talking about depression all the time, ever?
One of my favorite bands is The Hold Steady.
Never heard of them.
Wonderful. You would love them.
Okay.
And New York based band, but the singer and songwriter is from Minneapolis, and I've gotten to know him, Craig Finn. And in one of his songs, he says, "Do you want me to tell it like it's boy meets girl and the rest is history? Or do you want me to tell it like a murder mystery? Nah, I'm gonna tell it like a comeback story."
Ooh.
So for me, all the mental health topics I do are comeback stories. I'm just emboldened and I'm strengthened by the topic. It can wear you out, but also, like, even if I'm talking to somebody who is in rough shape and doesn't know what the future holds, they're putting it out there to help other people, to help themselves, to help their understanding. So I think, you know, it's the work I do is never based on somebody sitting alone in a room. It's based on, except me right now.
same.
but it's about somebody trying to get better. And even that effort, I think, is a tremendous inspiration.
God damn, that was beautifully put. You really do have a way with words. So what's your comeback story?
Wow, there's been a few. I mean, the shortcut version is I had been dealing with something since like seventh grade, something like dehumanizing, frightening, alien, other. I didn't know it was depression. And so I stuffed it down deep inside.
As we do,
because you don't, the last thing you want to do when you're a kid is stand out in a crowd.
Oh, God. I mean,
God forbid. Terrifying. And I found that I had a knack for performing and presenting myself. So like I could get, you know, I was cast in plays and I could do stuff there. I was good at giving speeches. I grew up with a lot of comedy all around me and I loved it. And I was pretty funny. And so when you have all that going for you, you could just say, well, I'll just put on a performance all the time.
All day. Oh no.
And it worked. And only when I was about in my mid 30s, I know.
That's life, a long time for it to work.
You know, I'm not somebody who catches on to things very fast. Like every M. Night Shyamalan twist blows my mind. I'm not expecting it.
That is such a personality trait for you to like put in your bio.
I'm stunned every time. Like, I'll look over at my wife and she's like, yeah, I figured it out at the beginning of the movie. But anyway, so in my mid-30s, I was, the stresses had started to pile up, and that breaks down your sort of retaining wall a little bit. And so I was married, we had kids, I owned a home, I was having a job that I needed to take seriously as a career thing, and it all caught up with me and I started to fall apart. My wife said, Jill said, well, I think you might have depression. And I said, well, no, I'm not sad. I'm just inexplicably angry all the time, you know, and I'm agitated. I thought that the condition of depression and the mood of depression were the same thing.
Go on.
Well, I mean, it could take a lot of forms. You could have the mopey despair, but like, I could always get out of bed. I've never had a problem getting out of bed. It's just that I was distracted. I was angry. I couldn't sleep. I wasn't violent, but I was just like mad all the time. And I said, well, no, I'm fine. It's just a stressful time. And she's like, well, we have two kids. It's going to be a stressful time for a long time to come.
At least 18 years.
Yeah. And it's been like this for a while. So that doesn't hold water. Honestly, and I thought, well, I don't want to go into a doctor for two reasons. One, I didn't want to waste the doctor's time.
Wow.
Even though talking to people is what a doctor's job is. Yeah. And I was like, that's not worth the copay. Our copay at the time was $10.
Oh, first of all, wow, $10. Yeah. Good for
you. I wasn't worth a Hamilton to myself. And Jill said, okay, fine. You don't love yourself enough to do this. Do you love me and the kids? And I said, yeah, of course. She's like, great. Do it for us instead of yourself.
How did that make you feel?
She got me.
She got you.
You know, when you've been outmaneuvered, you just have to knock the king over and take the L.
You got to just admit it. Gotta go.
Yeah. And so I went and they said, yeah, you've probably had this since junior high and there's things we could do about it. And so that was the first comeback. And then the second
applause for that.
Thank you. And then the second comeback was a couple years after that, when my brother died by suicide largely because of untreated depression. He was a recovering addict and worked a suicide prevention hotline, a Narcotics Anonymous hotline.
Wow.
He lived down in San Diego and could really reason with anybody about why their life was worth living except his own. And he felt like all the problems he had, the broken relationships, the spotty employment, the methamphetamine, you know, the homelessness, the getting money from people, because with addiction, that's all that matters is getting your substance. He's like, it's all because I am bad. I made bad choices. I'm weak. Not that he had an illness.
Right.
And he died because he didn't talk about it. And so I talk about this a lot in the writing and in speaking that I do, but I just said, okay, I'll talk about it. You know, I'll be the loudmouth. If we all need to talk about this more, you know, let it begin with me.
Right. I love that you call yourself a loudmouth. I'm the same. I say that too. I'm like, sometimes I don't know what I'm saying, but I just know we need to say it. I just know I've been there. I've been on the brink and I just am yelling, someone pay attention to me.
There's a moment in my interview with you that comes out at the same time where I just said, what must it be like for people who just don't talk sometimes?
I could never know.
I don't know. I fondle their blonde ringlets in amazement as they've landed deep in the forest.
Man, and you know, thank you for sharing about your brother's story too, because I have written about, you know, suicide and suicidal ideology, and there's this I've heard that there's a like sort of like a switch that goes off when someone decides to, you know, end the pain. And it's unless you can stop it in that like time, that switched time frame, you know, there really isn't much you can do. And people have stuff going on. Like, I'm not available at all hours. I've got, you know, I can't be next to someone at all hours of the day. And I just wonder how you went from grief to advocacy and activism. And how did you even do that? I just feel like I couldn't. Oh, wow.
Well, you know? I lived in Seattle for a long time. I grew up in the Seattle area. And there was this, the Aurora Bridge is in the middle of Seattle, really high bridge. A lot of people have died on it. Mm-hmm. And I had my own experience walking out to it to not necessarily intent on dying, but wanting to see what it's like to kind of push the moment to its crisis, right? And, but I remembered that there was an effort underway to put up fences along the bridge.
Yeah.
And there was opposition to it because people don't like to spend money in Seattle. And they said, well, if someone is determined to die, they're going to die anyway. So they'll just climb the fence or they'll go die somewhere else.
Wow.
But what a lot of the experts said, and I read up on this, was that's not really necessarily true.
Right.
Because if you can delay the acting on the impulse and get somebody to think about another possible future, if you can win that moment, then you allow for possibilities, and that can make all the difference. True. And so, you know, that fence is up there now, and I think it's saving a lot of lives. And you know, some of the first interviews that I did, I talked with both Dick Cavett about this and Maria Bamford of like, what I couldn't really get through was, all right, you're in so much pain and you want the pain to go away.
Right.
But if you do this, you know, Cavett said, there is no you to feel better, you know, and that's a logical gap to me. Like,
wow.
You know, I realized so much of the struggles that I had were about just wanting that pain to stop.
Right.
But you got to be around to feel that relief.
Ah.
And what Maria said was, oh no, you know that in that moment. You know, it's like OCD or depression or anxiety, all these other things where you know how fucked up it is.
Yeah.
But it's too strong.
Yes.
And so she's like, she's like, the present moment is unbearable. And that's when you get to that point.
Right. Right.
You know, but to me, like Maria's an inspiration in so many ways, but, but the way that she can explain that is almost like a golden path, you know, through the understanding to a better future.
I think I mentioned this a little bit on the episode with you of like, you're not thinking of other people. It's a very selfish and rightfully so. Like, selfish, I think, has a negative connotation, but it's maybe self-fulfilling. It's very self-obsessed. It's inside. Yeah.
Well, you're beating the shit out of yourself. You know, that takes a lot of concentration. You can't think of the rest of the world.
You can't go pick up your laundry the same day.
No, you're in the middle of a beatdown. You're behind the bar kicking the crap out of somebody by the dumpster. It just happens to be yourself.
I mean, like, you do inject a lot of comedy into the brand, I guess, you know, say brand, but it's like your humanness, and just like the people you've interviewed. And I know that was the appeal to you, right? When first starting out in the Hilarious World of Depression podcast, was like getting these comics to like that.
Well, part of that was that I knew a lot of them, and so the booking might be easier. But I had also, you know, I had cultivated relationships interviewing them on other platforms. And, you know, I was in public radio for like 20 years. Wow. And so they might be available, but I also noticed that a lot of the ones I followed would talk about depression either on stage,
right,
or you know, like Patton or Maria, or they, I got to know them and they would just talk about it socially. Wow. as a thing.
Really?
And, like, yeah,
just hanging out.
Just hanging out. It's just really common. And wow. So the original idea I had was, let's figure this out. Like, are depressed people more drawn to comedy, or does life as a comic bring out a depression? Like, what is it?
And what'd you find?
That it's unanswerable. You know, like Patton said, well, there's no more depressed comics than there are depressed dentists. but, you know, if a dentist was talking about suicide, you'd find a different dentist. but it's a comedian's job to share what's going on with them. And it's their talent. Mm. And so, you know, and I know, like, Dana Gould, the comedian, told me, well, it's a perfect situation for a depressed person. Like, you go to this town, you go up on stage, you know what you're going to say. You don't need to worry about what other people are going to say for the most part.
Right.
People are going to laugh at these certain moments. Then you could go back to your motel room alone and drink vodka. It's perfect. Everybody wins.
The perfect job.
The perfect job. But what I found, the more I talked to people who were storytellers, like whether they were novelists, musicians, like singer-songwriters, comedians, is that they could explain the human condition. Or they could illustrate the human condition. And that's what I really wanted. Like, I think I'm interested in the science of depression. I'm interested in the brain chemistry. I'm not the best person to talk about that.
We're not doctors.
But in terms of, like, getting people to share the lived experience.
Right.
I think that's a hole that some of us have been trying to fill.
Yeah, because, you know, I had a, like, ironically depressing conversation with my partner the other day, just about, like, you know, in spiritual awakening and kind of stoicism, it really is the conclusion in all these books that nothing matters, right? Like, we're just on a rock floating through space.
Yeah.
But, like, why do we want to create joy in those moments in between? Like, why didn't we choose, like, the Justice League underworld side and just go, like, no, let's just fucking wreak havoc, like, fuck the world? Like, why did we choose to try to fight for joy and laughter?
I think maybe because we know that we're just this temporary assembly of carbon, you know, that will one day collapse and then reform into something else.
Right.
I think a lot of creating things, whether it's a podcast or book or a painting or whatever it is a bid for some degree of immortality, or to stretch out your mortality.
Legacy.
But I think it's also just to make things a little more fucking pleasant than they would otherwise.
Right. Be. Yeah. I mean, and in a world right now, I mean, to bring the conversation a little bit to today.
Yeah.
What are we supposed to do when everybody is feeling the collective fuckery and sadness? And, you know, I'm not expecting you to solve it for me, but I was really hoping maybe you had a little something you could share.
Yeah. Yeah, if you can't help me carry this boulder, at least recognize that we both have boulders.
Right. What the fuck? Is your back hurting?
Yeah. You know, like, we're all carrying the elephant in the room on our backs as we walk around.
Right.
I mean, I had this moment before I started the last show. This was, you know, 5-6 years ago now, where my family was on vacation. I have three kids. Me and my wife have three kids. And we don't do it anymore. The typical mom and dad thing of, like, let's go on interminable road trips.
Oh,
and that will be fun for you somehow. I know.
I'm doing one later this year.
Okay.
To Yosemite with my father. And it's It's a fulfillment for him that I am giving him.
Oh, that's so kind of you.
You're welcome.
We were on our way back from the West Coast, driving back to Minnesota, Grand Tetons National Park.
Beautiful.
And Jill started to get this pain in her stomach that we chalked up to bad hot dogs.
Oh, well.
And went to see urgent care in Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Another beautiful place.
And the beautiful doctor said, oh, that's a stomach flu. Okay. It's certainly not appendicitis.
Okay.
It was appendicitis.
Of course it was.
And as we drove across the country, it got worse and worse. And by the time we got to Minnesota, we were an ambulance. You know, we were taking her.
So dangerous.
And she got to the hospital and it had ruptured and there was sepsis involved.
Oh, no.
And she pulled through, right? But she might not have.
Right.
And it was this thing for me of like, oh shit, you know, we're all walking in traffic. We could all get hit by a bus. You know, right. There's no guarantees in any of this. So what are you supposed to do here?
Yeah.
Like, okay, we're here on this spinning rock. We are carbon piles.
Yeah.
The fuck are we supposed to do?
Yeah. You know?
And so, you know, this is a midlife crisis without the convertible or the affair, basically, that I was having.
No one's getting anything. No one's orgasming out of this.
No,
bullshit.
Certainly not. Certainly not. And, you know, and I thought logically about it. And I thought, well, maybe you're just supposed to help carry the load for other people. You know, maybe that's enough. Maybe you don't need to, you know, make $1 million. Maybe you don't need to be the best in the world at whatever your profession is. Mm. You know, maybe you don't need to be, you know, like work out and have the perfect body. Maybe you just need to fucking help.
Yes.
You know, maybe you need to make things a little bit better than they would otherwise be if you weren't doing it.
Yeah. And life is already so hard on its own that to add a global pandemic, mass shooting, racial injustice and inequalities on top of it. And I've said this a million times in interviews, but I think because it's gotten so bad, there has shown this community and light and forced people, whether they liked it or not, to recognize what was important to them on this spinning rock and carbon skin body.
It's a survival mechanism. I think we're trying to survive because you know, I was talking with Ken Duckworth, who's the medical director for NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness. And I was talking about the trauma of the pandemic and the legacy we're going to have to carry through. And you and I talked about this, like, will we be the flapper gin joint generation, or will we be hoarding pizza crusts for eternity?
Great Depression.
And I said, I was telling him, like, everything I could think of that might compare to the pandemic, like social unrest and rioting, political upheaval, that has also been happening.
Right, simultaneously.
We have had all that.
Right.
It's bound to be causing like this existential unsafe feeling of, you know, and I think what any species would do is bond together, strengthen numbers and try to protect each other. Maybe we can, you know, and I think we'll be messed up for a while. I think we're going to need that for a while. Maybe we can hold on to a little bit of the humaneness that represents.
Absolutely. I mean, I wanted to ask too, like, what about your routine has changed for mental health in the last 2 years or, you know, year and a half?
My floor routine or my balance beam?
Both.
Okay.
And just, you know, routine is so important for people that discuss mental health, I think, for a living. You gotta have a separation, right?
You do. You know, for me, what I've been focusing on the last couple of years is trying to be in the present moment as much as possible and trying to, and the way I've been doing that is try to recognize the distortions that are happening. And so if I start to worry about something and then I start projecting out all the bad ways that can go in the future, you know, or, and then thinking back, you know, so that's like a, an anxiety projection.
Sure.
And then I start to backwards project more of a depression thing.
Love like that for you.
All the things that I've done wrong in the past that have led me to this bad moment.
Right.
It's a bunch of suppositions and misinterpretations and lies that I'm doing in that moment. Right. And it's,
but you're probably really good at it.
I'm very skilled.
Yes.
But it doesn't help, and it's built on lies, and it's a distortion. So it's a matter of consciously catching myself in that moment, and then saying, okay, let's get back to the real moment here. Let's get back to what's happening right now. Like, if I'm worried about this, what do I actually verified know about this?
Right.
And it, you know, and without like, oh, and then so-and-so is going to say this and is going to take this away from me. No, that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
What do we know right now?
Yeah, like for being shitty crystal ball predictors, we still seem to keep doing it for ourselves.
Yeah, well, and it's so much more work. Like, it's why people with depression and anxiety sometimes need to take all those fucking naps, because we're exhausted. It's so much mental energy going out to
all
create those
things.
All the time. And so I've been working on kind of modeling myself after my dogs, you know, who are like, exist right in the moment and are just content being there, because they can't go in the future and past.
No, that's such a good comp.
It's so important to have that in my life. And I've been working on, I think we talked about it a little bit, the John Kabat-Zinn mindfulness-based stress reduction meditation.
Yeah. Sounds very fancy and with it.
It's very simple. It's about being still and noticing your breath.
I fucking hate that though, John.
You can't do it?
I try, and I force myself to, and I even try to trick myself into saying I like it, but that's very hard.
It's so hard. Yeah, but you know what? You can't do it wrong.
Ooh.
Like if you can do it for 30 seconds, that's wonderful. Yeah. I mean, it's for me, it was meditation, removing the mysticism from it. Cause I had looked into meditation a little bit, but like learning all these Sanskrit words and learning the history of the Buddha, I'm like, fuck, I've got places to be. And
I've got time. I need to be depressed. I can't also
depression
in Sanskrit.
Right. I'm, you know, things are going well on Candy Crush. I can't do it. But once it boiled down to sitting, breathing, nothing else, then I started to catch onto it. And when I get away from it, the distortions ramp up. And when I can stick with it, the distortions settle down.
And what is relieving about the present moment?
It's simpler. It's less work. And it's real. You can feel the breath in your lungs. And, you know, you can think, well, that person hates me, and they're going to get other people to hate me, and I'm going to lose my job, and, you know, my partner's going to hate me and get sick of me, and I will die in a Walmart parking lot. None of that's real.
Depressing.
I'm pretty skilled. Like I said, I have a lot of experience, but none of that's real. And so it all takes brain cycles to generate, and it wears down your brain when your brain doesn't have to be that tired.
That's an interesting point, that you don't have to be. It's a automatic reaction of conditioning. It becomes the easier choice. Like, I think it is very hard to not be the way we are. to change, but we must, right? Or we die.
Well, I think that the labor is put out there because we live in a chaotic universe where there are variables, there are unknowns. It's terrifying.
Right.
And so I think, I mean, from friends I know who have OCD, I've experienced it a little, but not much. Mm-hmm. But friends who have it in a serious way, it's like, it's fucking scary out there. I'm going to try to control my environment. And if it means these light switches, and if it means these things lined up, that's better than nothing. So I think we're trying to survive and navigate and organize a world that defies navigation.
Yeah, we're miracles. Like, like the fact that you and I made it this far is fucking insane.
I know.
Like, look at us. True. We're thriving, dare we say.
We're doing fine.
Speaking of thriving, you have to tell me a little bit about Depression Mode, because today's the day, baby. Are you
so
nervy?
Great.
Like, what happened from the last time you've been on air to now? For you mentally, what brought you back? Like,
yeah,
what are you excited for?
So I worked at American Public Media for about 14 years and did a lot of different things there. COVID hit. They didn't have as much money as they needed, and I got laid off, and the show was canceled. Ugh. And
you're like, you can't cancel a show about helping with people with depression right before a fucking global pandemic, but hey.
Right. Yeah, and you can't cancel health insurance for a family of five. But it was a situation where, you know, I had been a company man for a long time, and I felt like I was on this long, narrow road with no exits, you know, a Wyoming freeway, right?
Beautiful.
there's no exits on that thing.
Yeah.
And suddenly as soon as I got laid off, as soon as word spread about that, my phone started blowing up with different companies that wanted to work with me.
Right.
Some who wanted the old show, some who said, we could work with you no matter what the show.
Love that.
The company, my former employer, didn't want to share the intellectual property. They didn't want to keep the show going, but I'm like, okay, I can reinvent. Yeah. I'm suddenly at an eight-way intersection instead of a one-way street.
Beautiful.
And, as I thought about what I wanted to do, I thought, well, there are two options. One, screw this, go to grad school, become a therapist, get out of media entirely.
Whoa.
Because it's hard, you know?
But you are a therapist without the degree.
I'm a person who's accumulated a lot of knowledge.
About the same things mental that therapists health. Learn.
Well, and that's what friends who are therapists tell me, like,
right,
go ahead and talk to people. You've done your work.
Yeah. You've been through it. You earned your badge.
Through it. But I thought, well, instead of like relying on download numbers and ad sales and book sales and tickets sold and all this, why don't I just try to help people one-on-one? You know, there's way more demand than there is supply. You know, people, I'm just famous enough that I could probably fill up my schedule real fast.
Hell yeah.
But then places like Maximum Fun, where I'm doing my show now, kind of showed me this model of like, okay, you make a show, you own that show.
Wow, a concept.
What's in that show, you decide. It belongs to you. If somebody wants to make a book or a TV show or anything out of it, you decide.
Right.
And that's what really got the brain thinking. And so I thought, okay, well, how many shows are we talking about doing? At the old place, I would do about 20 episodes a year. The new place, they said, well, we're looking at 48 episodes a year. So new show pretty much every week.
Okay.
All right. And and so I was like, well, what could I do with that? I love, you know, the more airtime, the better, right?
Right. We love our voices. You've got to have that voice on Sweet Sweet Radio, sir.
Because then you get the validation from strangers. You can't generate for yourself. Everybody wins. but I thought, well, I could expand beyond depression and comedians. I could, whoever else I've been talking to, I could talk about eating disorders. I could talk about trauma. I could talk about panic disorders, and I could talk about how friggin' hard it is to get mental health in America. I could talk about what bipolar and bipolar two are and aren't. I could talk about what borderline personality disorder is. I could talk about the long-term trauma effects we're going to have from this thing.
Wow.
There's no shortage of stuff to talk about.
Right.
And then it got really exciting. And then I thought of the dumbest name I could think of, Depresh Mode. Bounced it off my wife. She laughed and said, "That's the name. That has to be the name."
It has to. Like I always call it like my depressy, a little meshy moment. Like this is very like cool of you. The title is very cool. Depresh.
It's a little, my 18-year-old daughter knew who Depeche Mode was. So there I was like, okay, it's famous enough. The gag works. It'll be fine.
Are you a fan of Depeche Mode?
You know, I've spent some lonely times in teen nightclubs in the 80s. Okay. So I'm familiar with the oeuvre.
Okay.
I'm not a big synthesizer guy. Like synthesizers and saxophones, I start to shut down a little bit.
Yeah, I'm like, I can do Healing Bowls or that. And I've chosen Healing Bowls, but you can't make me do both.
Yeah, it's a little tough. I was always, I probably a little more towards Joy Division, New Order, more so than Depeche Mode.
I don't know what that is, but I'm so thrilled for you. Well, speaking of your kids, you know, I know we're kind of wrapping up here, but they must be so proud. And I wonder, like, what is that like to have kids? And also, again, like coming back around to the, we know you're an activism. We know you're an advocate. We know you're more than just a guy who's known for clinical depression. You know, we've talked about your comeback story. I don't think I have the strength that you have in being bold enough to have children. Like my number one fear is that they will turn out like me. And I'm like, why would I do this? But I know it's conditioning, it's trauma, it's breaking the cycle. But like, what's that relationship like?
Yeah. It's a roll of the dice. Like two of our kids are slightly less than 2 years apart, and they just couldn't be more different as humans.
Wow.
I mean, it's the grandest adventure in the world. Aww. And, you know, and I mean that in the Indiana Jones, you might find treasure, you might get crushed by a boulder kind of way.
Oh, great.
All on the same day. Like I've never been one of those people who would tell friends who don't have kids, like, oh, you got to have kids. When are you going to have kids? I'm like, I get it. It's a lot. I wouldn't ever... God knows we've got enough humans. There's no particular need to have more.
I don't need to add to my insurance plan. It's expensive.
Right. But I mean, a few things that I'm proud of. I mean, I could go on and on of things I'm proud of with them. But the way we raise them about mental health is to treat it like an ear infection, you know, a sore knee, like, oh, this is going on with me. Okay, great. Let's get to a doctor, get it checked out. Wow. Oh, okay. Well, I figured that out. Okay, good. And so we don't mystify mental health or sex. We're like, that's at a very amazing. Early age, at a very early age, we're like, okay, this doesn't need to be spooky. Here's what happens with sex. Here's how it works. And, you know, just not buying into any of the the mysticism,
and they're alive and they're well.
Yeah. And you know, they're all three funnier than me because they grew up on comedy.
With a funny dad, right?
With a funny dad and a funnier mom. I'm in a solid fifth place in our family.
Oh no.
But then like you just don't know what's gonna happen. Like my son, who is interested in stand-up comedy, also is getting like, I think he finally declared history as a major, almost like economics minor.
Okay.
Fields that I'm not even sure what they are.
I don't know either. I couldn't tell you.
He's into that. My daughter is into environmental science.
Love that. You know, I know what that is.
I have a theater degree. My wife has a fine arts degree. So like, that's
what are
you
guys gonna do with that?
The form of rebellion, like our, you know, like for most people, like the arts degree is the rebellion for my kid. It's right. Like, I'm studying economics.
And you're like, go for it, son. Don't like, be like me.
Try to explain the GameStop thing to me at some point.
You're like, Bitcoin, do we have it? Can we get it?
He made money somehow off Dogecoin.
I got Dogecoin.
And GameStop.
That's incredible for him. Like, if he got it on it, GameStop, that's great.
He didn't make a lot, but he's like, I want to see if I can ride this. It's like it's like a mechanical bull. Somehow
he's got a hold on Dogecoin though. You got to tell him to hold. I am with him on this.
I don't understand his world, but like it's a little though, like, you know, what I said that talking to, you know, YouTube people like Zach Kornfeld, your co-host now, congratulations.
Big fan of Zach Kornditty on this podcast.
And Allison Raskin, you know, I do feel like a chimp with an iPad compared to these people, because I am of one older generation that, like, I'm sort of just baffled and agog at what the youngs are creating.
No, but you know what? You'll never be like, I'm making air quotes, old, because of what you're talking about. It's like so desperately a topic that we are passionate about. And like, that's why I'm excited for Depression Mode. And I'd love if you can like tell the confidants what we could expect this year.
Sure. Sure. I don't have a TikTok yet. I know you want me to get a TikTok.
We got to get you on TikTok, John.
I'm scared to
dance. You will blow up on TikTok. Therapist TikTok is the place to be.
Is that the place to go? Okay.
I just had it to therapists on yesterday. Both have 1 million followers on TikTok.
I might need your consultancy.
I am here.
So the show launches today, March 29th, with Patton Oswalt and Kelsey Darragh.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
We've got a show on burnout the following week and just the epidemic of workplace burnout and how the poison that's happening there.
Yep.
Who else we got coming out? Zach Kornfeld, Open Mike Eagle, Peter Sagal from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yes.
And then some of these shows on trauma. We have one about the relative efficacy and security of apps, mental health apps.
Whoa.
Some of which are run by medical foundation, some of which are run by actual high school students.
That's
but they
incredible.
All appear the same, and it's
that's
terrifying.
Incredible. But like, so I love that this is so much more of like a wide variety, like you said.
It's about the show is about what it's like to have a mind in 2021 and what to do with it. We
Anyone
all have it.
Listening is got it and can
it's
relate.
Probably got some dents and scrapes in it. So we're going to talk about that.
Don't we all? I think that's something that everyone should subscribe to, even if you can't relate to the topics, right? Like, I personally have never struggled with an eating disorder, but I've got symptoms of eating disorder tendencies as it relates to my anxiety or depression.
Well, and aren't you curious how it works? Like,
yes!
I haven't, don't think I've had those either, but like, I know already, and we haven't made the show yet. I know already saying eating disorders is a way too broad of a term for what people get, you know?
And I think like, if you're interested in mental health, Depression Mode is going to be that one where you subscribe. And if you're a fan of, you know, your mind, you're going to enjoy all the topics. Like, that's what I'm most excited for, is just to learn. Because like I said, you're a great host. You're a great storyteller.
Thanks.
And it's been really nice to get a lot out of you. I'm usually the one that just, you can't shut up. And it's been such a joy. John Moe, can you please tell the confidants where everyone can find you?
Wherever podcasts are accumulated, or search on Depression Mode, go to MaximumFun.org. They have links there. I'm on Twitter at John Moe, Jonathan
H. Yes,
we have a Depression Mode newsletter on Substack. And if you're checking this out before Tuesday the 30th, I'm going to have the Depression Mode debrief on YouTube Live.
What? What time?
Well, yours is at 2 p.m. Central.
Oh,
Patton's
my gosh.
Is at 1 p.m. Central.
I gotta put it on my calendar.
Yeah.
Come on. Put it on your calendar.
Come on by and we'll talk about you. It'll be awesome.
Oh my God, that won't be weird at all. Well, Coffee Knots, all of that will be listed in the description below. Please, please, please go give that a follow. Check out John's stuff. I think he's so fantastic. And plus, he liked my book, which means in my eyes.
Love the book.
Jesus Christ. Like you can do no wrong.
We should mention too that we got connected just
on
by
Twitter, which
somebody
again,
on Twitter who said you should just ask John.
Yeah, and you were like, okay, send it over. And I was like, wait, first of all, you have a Twitter. You're like a journalist. Do you have a Twitter? And second of all, I just sent it over and you were like, yeah, here you go. Bloop. And I was just like,
We're like friends in science fiction, Kelsey. Like we're from different planets, yet somehow we are friends.
And that's what I love is I'm like, oh my God, he knows who I am. I know who he is. We like each other's work. I'm very happy. I'm very pleased with this relationship.
It's going well.
Well, thank you, John, so much again. Confidants, don't forget you can rate this 5 stars on iTunes. It really helps. And if it's not 5 stars, please don't rate it at all because I'm very sensitive. Speaking of sensitivity, you can go check out the merch now and go pick up Don't Fucking Panic while you're over there. And we will see you.